You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. Final day of September and the third quarter as futures swing into the green. We watch debate reaction, corporate layoffs, some positive news on testing and vaccines, Palantir and stimulus, and that's going to lead our roadmap. Speaker Pelosi set to talk with Mnuchin again today, and we will hear from the Treasury Secretary in a few minutes at Delivering Alpha.
Plus, Palantir's public debut, the data mining firm backed by Peter Thiel, is going to have a direct listing at the New York Stock Exchange. Lots to discuss there.
And COVID optimism. Regeneron saying its treatment cocktail helps in the early stages of the virus. And we will talk with the company's co-founder and chief science officer later on this hour. Jim, of course, you got to get the debate out of the way. Everybody's talking about that. And we're going to hear the argument that if you look at futures and even some of the prediction markets today, there's an argument that the debate really didn't change the broad contours of the race.
Before we got PMI, before we got this little squib from Speaker Pelosi, the futures were down very big. When I was watching Dom this morning, it looked like the market would be very ugly. And I think that was because a recognition that there was no way you could possibly have any sort of compromise on stimulus, given how much a man who says I am the party, Vice President Biden, could disagree. I guess the word disagree could be used. It was pretty vehement with the president. So, David, when I listened to it, my thinking was they're so far apart that there's no way that there could be a deal. But obviously, hope continues to spring eternal.
Well, I think we'll have to see what Secretary of the Treasury Mnuchin has to say about it, because he does seem to be the other side of the conversation. At least he has been when it comes to Speaker Pelosi. Unclear what Chief of Staff Meadows is going to do here. He's been seen in some ways as an obstacle, despite what was his optimism weeks ago that maybe something would get closer when you had that draft proposal out of that sort of bipartisan group of Congress people, Jim. But to your point, given the rancor we saw last night, it does become hard to imagine compromise of any sort, ever, period, regardless, frankly, of who even wins the election.
I could agree more when I'm listening. I mean, what they're trying to do is destroy each other. And it's not, I mean, to me, maybe there are other representatives of the various parties that could say, hey, listen, you know, that was just theater. And we're reality. But, Carl, I think the idea that that's theater and we're reality should be switched. The president's reality, and I'm afraid that Secretary Mnuchin's theater, as when we hear Becky interview him, I want to know the seriousness of this whole thing. Because I've got to tell you, there's so many small, medium-sized businesses that would switch their plans radically if they knew what was going to happen. They go into survival mode rather than a mode which just says, okay, it's business as usual. And without any sort of stimulus, you know what? It's October. You got to pay your rent. If they're not going to give us money for rent, time to close. Pretty simple.
Yeah. So right now, Jim, are you more worried about the ongoing pressure on small business like we've talked about all week, or the layoff announcements that we're getting like Disney, like Shell, like Dow today, Marathon getting some underway as well, the S&P layoffs, and airlines too, as the CARES Act expires today?
Yeah, I'm very worried because I think that some of this is the fault of the government. Remember, Mr. Wonderful was saying 60-65%. Of the of small business of business is small business. I know Larry Kudlow agrees with a very high number, and obviously the aerospace business is incredibly big. Don't forget, it also includes Boeing. These different ones in the chemicals, I think those are companies that are actually doing quite well. So I don't really get why they need to do the layoffs, but I just think that it has to do with business planning. It's almost as if no one I remember that George McGovern, who ran for president at one point as a senator, said if he had owned an inn when he was a senator, he would have realized and voted very differently. I don't think these people understand. that you're just going to close. I mean, there's no sense to be open if there's no money coming to you. And so this is a make or break moment for everybody, including the airlines, for a huge part of America. And David, I think that they're out of touch in Washington with what it means to have the cash flow of a diner.
Well, who's out of touch? I mean, let's be fair. The House passed a bill of over $3 trillion in May, Jim.
Well, okay, out of touch meaning they can't reach a compromise.
Okay.
Not that somebody has the right number and somebody's the wrong, but that there should be some way to get people to be targeted. I mean, look, not everybody needs a bonus, right? Just industries that are closing. Carl, back to you.
Jim, we're going to head to Delivering Alpha, the Treasury Secretary, with our Becky Quick.
Writ large, is what's going to happen in terms of another financial aid package? We've got millions of Americans who are out of work. We've got businesses small and large that are in crisis at this point through no fault of their own. Will we see another financial package to aid them before Election Day?
Well, the president and I are working hard on a bipartisan proposal. I spoke to Speaker Pelosi several times over the weekend. We had a conversation for about an hour yesterday, going through different aspects of it. And I expect I will come back with her later this afternoon and we'll deliver a response. So I think we'll have a very reasonable response, something that's very similar to what has been the bipartisan proposal that the problem solvers has worked on. And I hope we can get something done because, as you said, there are clearly still businesses out there, small businesses that are impacted. We need more money for kids going to school. We need liability protection for small businesses to open the economy. And we're going to continue to work hard to try to get those results to the American people that are impacted.
Mr. Secretary, you're usually pretty even-keeled, and you are probably the person most in the administration who has reached across the aisle to try and have these conversations. Although I have gotten the sense lately that you've been a little frustrated, too. I just wonder, in those conversations with Speaker Pelosi, is it more or less contentious than the debate we saw last night?
Well, the Speaker and I have a relationship, which it's all business. I think we're very effective in communicating with each other in many cases. We do have things that we agree on, and we have things that there are differences. And we're trying to see if both of us can manage a package that gets some of what everybody wants.
Do you think that's likely? Because I have to say, at this point on Wall Street, most people have written off the idea that there will be any package that can be decided, at least not before the election.
Well, I say we're going to give it one more serious try to get this done. And I think we're hopeful that we can get something done. I think there's a reasonable compromise here, something that the president very much wants to get done and make sure that we help those parts of the economy that still need help. So we're going to try to see if we can get something passed.
Even if you do reach an agreement with Speaker Pelosi, you still have the Republicans in the Senate who have been pushing back and who the demands that they put forth, the things that they'd like to see, is a much skinnier package than I think the administration and the White House has kind of put forth. They're looking to spend less than $900 billion. How would you bring those Senate Republicans on board, and have you spoken to any of them?
Mark Meadows and I spoke to both Kevin and Mitch McConnell yesterday. We went through with them what our thoughts are, and let's see if we can get a compromise agreement with the Speaker, something that works, and then we'll continue to work with both sides to work on all the exact language and the policies.
Can you give us any idea of the scope of what is there in the middle ground? I mean, I think I can guess at some of these things. What's targeted, what seems to have bipartisan support, and I would throw out things like extending unemployment to some extent and raising that number, maybe extending some money for small businesses, potentially the airlines, making sure that this is targeted information. But can you give us any scope about the things that you've been discussing that you think are likely and that there is common ground?
Well, first, let me say all the issues that we worked with the Senate on the $1 trillion deal are in there. In many cases, we actually have an agreement between the Republicans and the Democrats on what we want to do. But in certain cases, the issue is really about the size and scope of how much we want to do. So there are certain policies where we do have differences, but there's a lot of commonality. Things like the PPP has enormous bipartisan support. Money for schools has enormous bipartisan support. We have additional direct payments, economic impact payments, which has support on both sides. We have back to work credits. We have retention credits. So I think there's many areas. You mentioned the airlines. We do support more money for the airlines. That's something that's critical to keep our airline workers together.
The airlines have issued a deadline of tomorrow before they will lay off 30,000 or even more employees that come up. Do you think that there will be any sort of a carve out or that this legislation could get passed before tomorrow's deadline just for that industry in particular?
I don't think there'll be anything on a standalone basis. You know, I would hope that by tomorrow we either have an understanding on an overall package. That doesn't mean, obviously, there wouldn't be a lot more work to do. But I am hopeful that we can come to an overall understanding. And if we do that, hopefully the airlines will postpone their actions. I will say I'm very proud of the people at the Treasury Department who have been working very hard to close all the airline loans. We got that done. And there's a lot of support we've already delivered for that industry.
Have you had any conversations with the CEOs of those airlines asking them to make sure that they would hold off on laying off anyone if there looks like there is at least some understanding between the parties?
I've spoken to all the airline CEOs on a constant basis. I think they've done a good job reaching out to both Republicans and Democrats. And I'll be calling them this afternoon and giving them an update on my conversations with the speaker.
Based on what you've said, Mr. Secretary, it sounds to me like the two big outlying issues that you would have between the left and the right is the Democrats really want to make sure that states see some sort of aid that's given to them to make sure that there aren't additional layoffs that happen to teachers and firemen along the way. And the right, the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate have said that they would like to make sure that they see liability for businesses, make sure that they're not liable for things that might happen by reopening during COVID times if they are following the rules. Do you think those two issues would be something that would be combined here, or would you take each of those out?
No, we'd have to have both of those in. It's very important for us to make sure that we have reasonable liability protection. That's both for schools and for small businesses. The Speaker and I have had discussions on that. We also know that the issue of money for state and local government is something that there is a divide on. We're going to try to come up with a compromise on that. I will just say in the regulations we've already done, we've given the states flexibility to make sure that they could use the money they have to pay first responders, firemen, policemen, other people. The president doesn't want to see these people laid off. These are critical emergency workers that are really working round the clock to support all of us right now. So we will be allocating some more money in a compromise package to pay for that.
Mr. Treasury Secretary, last week I spoke with Brian Moynihan, the CEO of Bank of America, and he said that based on what they are seeing at the bank, they believe that it will probably take about five quarters before you get back to the growth levels that we were seeing before the pandemic, GDP growth of 1 to 2%. He did say if there was another aid package that was passed, he thought that that could move things forward. I guess I would ask you, what's your expectation for the economy and what's your expectation if there's no more aid that's passed?
Well, let me first say, I think the economy is doing much better than anybody expected at this point. Both the unemployment rate dropping back down to close to 8% is really extraordinary from what had been very high levels in closing the economy. So as we've reopened, I think you've seen a very good rebound. I think you're going to see a very good quarter. Having said that, we still have more work to do. Until we get everybody back to work, the president and my job is not done. That's something that we're very focused on. And I would say that clearly this package will help the economic recovery. And I would also say the progress that we're making on vaccines and testing also is going to help the economic recovery. The 150 million Abbott tests that we have that will be delivered between now and the end of the year, and those are mostly going to go to schools, nursing homes, and other types of institutions. Very, very cost effective, $5 a test. You can do them very quickly, get the response very quickly. These types of advances in testing is really going to create a boost for the economy.
I guess I would ask what your outlook for the economy. I mean, it's very hard to try and pin this down at this point because we don't know what happens with COVID during the winter months. We have had lots of doctors, including Dr. Scott Gottlieb, who joined us today to say that he does think we will see a resurgence of coronavirus cases in the winter here. I don't know what that means potentially for businesses having to shut down again. But I wonder your own forecast. How do you measure this? How do you kind of see out and what is built into your forecast in terms of what we see with coronavirus in the next few months?
Well, I've been listening to the medical professionals, and again, I take great comfort in the progress that's being made on vaccines. I think it's pretty clear we're going to have a vaccine. What the exact date is, we'll see. It could be soon. It could be the end of the year. But I think that the money that we've invested in vaccines, vaccine development, manufacturing, is really going to pay off. It was a extraordinary commitment that is really going to help. I would also say, as you look at more and more testing, you're going to see more cases. I had an experience with someone in the last 2 weeks who was tested. They never even had any symptoms. So I think this is a very bizarre disease. In certain cases, people get it with no symptoms. In certain cases, it is difficult, especially when people have medical conditions. But clearly, the economy is tied to the medical advancement. And I think that traditional, I've said before, traditional economic models don't work. But what I can tell you, more fiscal response will help the economy. And I would also say the sooner we're able to get these advances of testing and vaccines into the economy, the better off we'll be.
All right, you've been listening to Secretary Mnuchin being interviewed, of course, by our Becky Quick at our Delivering Alpha conference. We'll have coverage, of course, throughout the day. So many notables. But here, guys, the key was, where do we stand in terms of potential negotiations between the administration, the Senate, and the House? And I guess, Jim, you would call that something positive. Mnuchin does seem willing to try to get something done here and did give us sort of a timeline. Saying he kind of hopes to get something done in the next day, at least make enough progress where they can say, okay, we are very close to a deal.
Well, I think it's about tone. The civility with which the secretary speaks, to me, and Becky's excellent question about the Senate was not really answered, but the civility, the tone, the lack of rancor really, to me, cuts to the idea that maybe there's mutual respect, which is needed at all times, and so therefore something can be hashed out. Carl, I think that what's been missing the whole time is a definitive view from the Senate, Mitch McConnell, that there are senators who think that we really need a stimulus. I think there's a lot of people who listen to the secretary, and they say, what the heck? Secretary just said business is great. Why are we giving away more money? That is really at the crux now of what they need to do.
Yeah, no, there's definitely vote counting in there. Jim, two things. This idea that he's going to give it one more serious try, how interesting is that? And then saying that he does not see standalone aid for airlines.
Yeah, I was actually hoping that there would be a carve-out for the airlines just because that's going to happen in 24 hours. The rest of it's going to happen when the people who seek your rent aren't paid. And I think that that's really the next hurdle for most of small, medium-sized business. And that matters. I thought that he said something very interesting that's been completely overlooked. He talked about how the president is releasing the Abbott Labs test. They're $5, $150 million. There'll be another $50 million this month. I think they can do $1 billion. And what that does is make it so that you can figure out very quickly, 15 minutes with an app, that you might be able to be clear for the 24 hours, which is why I thought it was such a shame that Disney had to lay off so many people. Now, I know that was a state issue, Carl. I know that that was about a viral load in that area. But the idea that you could have something on your cell phone that would give you 24-hour immunity is what you need. And Secretary Mnuchin said that. The president said it. But there's been absolutely no communication that I can tell other than to nursing homes, but not to airlines, not to theme parks, of the valid nature of a 24-hour pass that you get for $5 instead of the 200 and whatever for United that's done on site. So
$143 from Vault, actually, for JetBlue. But that takes a day or two. We had the CEO on yesterday, Jim. And that's still a lot of money. You know, when you think about it, in terms of taking a trip, maybe it makes sense. But given where air travel is right now in terms of pricing, it's a pretty big percentage of what you're paying.
You should go to Walgreens, get the $5 Abbott test, and then go.
Yeah, but here we are 7 months into this pandemic, and we still don't really have easily accessible, cheap, reliable testing.
Well, but the government has them. They have 150 million of them. But they've given some to nursing homes. 98% accuracy.
Great.
I know. Well, Abbott Labs. Do you have the app? I downloaded the app.
No, I don't have the app.
You need the app.
Thankfully, we get tested here once a week.
Well, anyway, Carl, we do have Regeneron to find out what it means to be tested once a week or tested every day.
Yeah.
Or
no,
if you're the Tennessee Titans. Wow.
Yep. The NFL was a big story yesterday, Jim. We're going to cover more of the testing and vaccine news we've gotten over the past 24 hours. Also, a series of upgrades in retail like Starbucks, Canada Goose, LB, Shopify, and more. We're back in a minute.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Let's get to the Mad Dash now. Starbucks is the feature as we, about 7 minutes before we get started with trading here on this Wednesday.
Well, you know what, David? There's a upgrade by Cowen. And they're talking about a much bigger bull case, raising estimates above the consensus. I think the Cowen analyst is really out there with this upgrade, because what that Cowen analyst is saying is that basically it's a risk reward, but the numbers will be better. And some of that is because of sales taxes to transcend displaced routines. They're going to have more stores. They're being able to negotiate really good leases. They're going to have curbside. So, David, what this upgrade is basically saying, even though it's the quiet period, and I don't really know the numbers because Kevin Johnson, the CEO, is not giving them out, they are doing their own work. I could call it freelancing, but I think that growth at scale agenda means to people it's time to buy Starbucks, which has not been a great stock. Been okay.
No, it has not been great. China, obviously, very important for the company. And the reopening there certainly was helpful.
But the U.S.
There are plenty of downtown
good.
Areas in this city, not to mention plenty of hotels and things of that nature where there's a Starbucks downstairs. And you could imagine traffic is not anywhere near what it was.
No, it's been bad. But Cowen's out there saying we're about to have that resurgence. What's good about this is people are looking for the next Nike. They're looking for the next Costco, the next Walmart. For instance, there's a note about Lulu. That's another one that people view as the next. So Cowen puts the next as Starbucks. And like I said, this has not been none of these numbers are being confirmed by Kevin Johnson, the CEO, because it's the quiet period, which means for people at home, you don't get any information. So this is this own field work.
Right.
Very
right.
Positive.
Well, sometimes that can actually be right.
I want to
see
like
that
field
from
work.
Analysts. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Actually doing work and taking a stand.
Yes.
When we come back, Jim, we're going to talk about Palantir's direct listing. Of course, the company is going public today. It's been a private company for, 17 years. We'll break it all down for you. Keep it here.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable, high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Opening bell on this final day of the third quarter in just a couple of minutes, Jim. The Treasury Secretary continues to make comments to our Becky Quick at Delivering Alpha, saying two things, Jim. One on TikTok, if there is no deal, then they will shut it down. The technology will be sanitized by Oracle, he says. And then asked if he was on board for a full second term, said yes, he will serve if the president is reelected.
Well, I mean, there you go. I think that obviously the president has, he can be arbitrary. But I do think that there is, that's helpful, again, in terms, all I care about is the stimulus. And if he has the president's backing, which is obviously from that statement, then there's hope that there can be something. But boy, are we desperate for it. And I still, I come back, Carl, and trying to figure out the situation with the airlines. I mean, I think that's so front and center. Philippeau has done unbelievable work about talking about how when you hurt the airlines, you hurt routes to different congressional districts. I really want to know more about that, because if they can't separate that from everything else and it's caught up, that's going to be the big layoffs. And you're going to see a spike in layoffs, and not just the Disney layoffs. So, look, I think everyone in the country wants some sort of deal, except for people who genuinely believe that the economy is incredibly strong. David, if you think the economy is incredibly strong, why would you give away $1 trillion?
You wouldn't. You wouldn't. And there are those who believe that the economy is strong enough to withstand this, Jim, and don't want to spend more money. Obviously, the budget deficit has been expanded greatly, not just over this last year, which has been truly extraordinary, but even prior to that. Remember, we were running a $1 trillion deficit,
right,
in part because of the 2017 tax cuts.
Well, right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that one of the things that came up last night, and I have I'm interviewing Senator Warren today, is that taxes will go up if Vice President Biden does win. I don't think there's any dispute with that, especially for the wealthy, David. So be prepared.
Yeah, I gotta get me a better accountant or buy some real estate, apparently.
Real estate doesn't help them.
Depreciating, hire some consultants. I don't know. I got to figure something out.
David, you're on your own.
I'll be up there at 60% soon enough. Poor W-2 employee. Now, listen, Carl, nothing to complain about here. Extremely lucky and thankful every day. So
we're definitely counting our blessings here, David. We saw the opening bell. Asana ringing the bell at the NYSE. Reference price 21. And reference price of Palantir, Jim, 725. That's going to be a big part of our discussion later on this morning.
Yeah, I mean, look, you could argue that's actually dramatically cheaper than what the Wall Street Journal was talking. Now, there was, and David, I know you follow the secondary market. You know, there was a September $11, low $8. So, I mean, could you argue that this one is a relative bargain? Relative bargain versus what it was.
Which one are we talking about? Sorry, Jim.
Palantir.
Okay. Because we have two direct listings today.
I know.
Carl just mentioned the other one. I mean, how extraordinary is that, by the way? On the same day, we've only had really two major direct listings up to this date, Spotify and Slack. And here we are. Morgan Stanley is it's not underwriting, but is helping to guide both of these. And they're going to be both worth watching.
Well,
Palantir, of course, we've been talking about for years and how it would go public and whether it would go public. It is not as though it has been a new company in any way. It's been run by Alex Karp, who will join us later on CNBC, for many years. Peter Thiel, of course, one of its largest shareholders. One of my questions, guys, is just how many shares are actually going to be for sale? Remember, again, this is selling shareholders, including Mr. Thiel, perhaps, or anybody else who decides in part that they want to try to sell some. Now, they have a large lockup, or a large percentage are locked up. But nonetheless, I just wonder, Jim, how much supply this thing there's actually going to be.
Well, they are locked. Yeah, they're locking up all but 20%.
Dave. Correct.
So David, this is one of those deals that is very hard for us in the media to really discern what's going on, because there's let's just say we know that the last trade was at $9.17, okay? How is it possible that they're bringing this at 7.25 is the reference price? It's just a reference price is what
It's a reference price. We'll see where it actually opens.
Does it have any meaning?
Somewhere around $22 billion. Well, it's got some meaning, but really it's what the market will bear, right?
Very true.
But again, what I've heard, I've talked to a couple of significant shareholders.
Okay.
It's not clear to me that they even are willing to part necessarily with what they could sell. And so I'm just curious to see how much is actually going to going to be out there to make the market today,
Jim. The last trade was at $9. You know, average it out, it's $9.17.
Well, that's the point. I mean, if you believe in the long term, ability of this company, are you really going to be a seller here at that reference price?
Well, that's my point. No.
No.
You wouldn't be.
Right.
It makes no sense. It's just not economic to do that, which is why, I mean, theoretically, if you get it to reference price, I mean, look, these things are still huge multiples to sales, and the company's not making any money. But people like data mining stocks, right? I mean, they like a Splunk, which is a data mining stock, but they don't get this kind of multiple to sales, and a lot of them are closer to profitability. Carl, I mean, this thing is just an enigma. It's a riddle. But I am sure that people will buy it just because, you know what? Data mining with government, with defense.
And moving on as well to commercial uses, as you know, right?
Right.
I mean, originally it was hunting for needles, not in one, but in thousands of haystacks for the government. They didn't have the software that the Palantir said to do their jobs. In Afghanistan, Iraq, soldiers were mapping networks of insurgents and makers of roadside bombs by hand. And so Palantir came in and help them identify patterns hidden deep within data sets and intelligence sources and things of that nature. But they also have gone on, and this is the more important effort for them, really, to try to sell these services on a commercial level, working with their data to try to find patterns, to try to understand things, and to try to keep track of things as well. They in the prospectus, they point out an Airbus A350 has 5 million parts. It's built by hundreds of teams that are spread across four countries and more than eight factories, and companies routinely struggle to manage, let alone make sense of the data involved in large projects.
Well, look, I think these are unique skills, but you're still paying 15 times for expected 2020 sales, and you're paying 11 times for expected 2021 sales. But, David, we're all thrown off. Why? Because Warren Buffett is paying 100 times sales for Snowflake, value buyer. So we're all thrown about what these times the sales numbers really are.
Yeah.
Have you been able to get a beat on that?
No. Specific to what? Berkshire in general?
Well, just
and their ownership of Snowflake, or just the multiples to sales that we're seeing in the marketplace?
Well, I've always felt that Berkshire Hathaway shunned IPOs and wasn't interested in fanciful valuations, but they are the largest outside shareholder of Snowflake.
There do seem to be others asserting their prominence at Berkshire beyond Mr. Buffett.
Right,
don't
and
you
I think it's right. That's why I bring it up.
And it's reflective of that, right?
Right.
It's not his position.
No, but it is a giant position in the most giant position in the highest valued stock in the market right now. Before that, it was Zoom. Okay, This is twice Zoom's valuation on price to sales. We haven't talked about it, Carl. This is Berkshire Hathaway. Berkshire Hathaway is shunning everything that we always heard the Oracle of Omaha talk about. But as David says, it's an agglomeration of analysts. And anyway, Apple's the best one they got.
By the way, Tim Cook with his first package of RSUs, I think, in about 9 years, Jim. That's an interesting piece of news out of Apple. As for the broader market, nice bounce, all sectors green. VIX is down a point. The Dow, almost all components are green, led by Boeing and Dow. Jim, and a lot of travel names doing well. I wonder if you think this is responding to the news we've gotten out of Regeneron, whom we'll speak to in a moment, Moderna, Quest, BDX, and some others.
We're getting a bridge. Regeneron is a bridge to a vaccine. The Abbott testing, which I continue to believe is undervalued in this market because it's only $5, is going to give you a chance to show that you don't have COVID. You can test every single day. I mean, obviously, you don't have COVID today. You get COVID tomorrow. And what did we learn from the Tennessee Titans? I mean, every one of those guys was tested right before the game, and then they tested after the game, and it was no go. But the one that I was hoping David would shoot down, and he hasn't, is the Duke Energy alleged deal, which, David, I am told is not a real deal.
You're told it's not real. I have no reporting on it for you yet. I found about it, like a lot of people did, by reading the Wall Street Journal. There was an approach made by NextEra to Duke. They rejected it. Very
Nothing
much unclear.
Live.
The Journal says that NextEra will come back, Jim, but I haven't even seen Duke's share price to see whether. I know it was up in the.
It would be hostile.
Yeah.
They don't do hostile deals in utilities.
No. No. It does point to potential consolidation in that industry. NextEra has been an aggressive acquirer. Guys, before we get to Bob, real quickly wanted to mention Alibaba. Don't forget, a $777 billion market cap company, one of China's largest, of course. It's up nicely this morning, Bob, over 3%, as you see. They had a three-day-long investor meeting, and on day three, they talked a lot about cloud, and their CFO guided AliCloud to turn profitable within fiscal year 21. And that seems to be making people happy because that effort has been underway for quite some time. There are others as well that are in more nascent stages of development at the company in terms of new business lines. And so there is obviously some happiness amongst the investor base that they are going to turn profitable there. Carl, back to you.
Yeah. Meanwhile, guys, Mnuchin tells Becky that we should know whether or not there's an understanding with the Democrats by Thursday. So being a little more specific on timing there. Let's get to Bob Pisani, see what else is moving. Hey, Bob.
Boy, what an overnight, Carl. Just a lot of market moving events happening. I just want to show you the futures because the futures moved in a 60-point range overnight. They were near their peak right after the debate ends and moved right down as soon as the debate ended. I'm talking like 10:36 Eastern time. We went straight down. Obviously, some questions about the election, the outcome, uncertainty. So let's take a look at the buckets that move the markets. Remember, we've had these four or five buckets that move the markets here. Uncertainty around the election is now very high, and even about the outcome, that was pretty clear. Treatment of vaccine, the progress you heard about Moderna and Regeneron and maybe a 15-minute test from Becton Dickinson over in Europe. That made some news. That's certainly good news. Stimulus, well, we don't know. Pelosi and Mnuchin are still trying for a deal. That's not dead at all. So let's just say that's still a positive potentially. The reopening is very mixed here. We've had layoff announcements from Shell and Dow, Disney, Marathon Petroleum. That could be a big issue in the next few weeks. But we also had great economic data this morning. Chicago PMI, much better than expected. ADP, better than expected. So these are an awful lot of cross currents for the markets to digest right now. A lot of issues laying around out there. If you look at the sectors today, well, we opened with energy and banks. Generally weaker. What else is new? Now they have moved into positive territory. Tech was doing a little bit better, and now it's underperforming a little. If you look at the quarter, on top of everything else, folks, that we have to deal with, it's the end of the quarter market gyrations here. And we can see we're pretty flat in materials and industrials. Tech still down 6%. Banks and energy continuing to underperform. So a tough month, first down month since March overall. The guys were talking about the direct listings today with Palantir, data mining company, of course, reference price, 7.25. Don't hold your breath when this is going to open, folks. Likely, it could be all the way till noon Eastern time. They're going to take a while, and that's because it's tough getting the right prices for these right now. And of course, Asana, big workplace collaboration software, same thing here. $21 reference price there. And again, unlikely that would open before about noon, maybe 11:30 or so. Direct listings are still relatively new. Remember, we don't have many of them that are out there. We've got Spotify and Slack here. So in terms of pros, why a direct listing? Well, you avoid the bank fees. That's important. And generally, there's no lockup period, although there is with Palantir. The cons, well, there's issues on price discovery. I mean, a reference price is just some idea roughly around it was trading last, but there's no institutional input into that overall other than what your advisor is telling you. And you don't have a lot of immediate long-term investors like you do with an IPO. So this is still relatively new. I would not call it untested. It's been tested, but it's still relatively new. We'll keep an eye on that. But again, folks, just don't hold your breath for the next couple hours. Guys, back to you.
All right, Bob. We'll see you in a bit. Bob Pisani. Bob mentions the data we got today, including Chicago PMI, which came out a little early. Let's get to Santelli.
Yes, Carl, all the data points were really fascinating today. Let's start with the early ones. Of course, we've talked about ADP better than expected. And we also understand there's a disappointment because we haven't recouped all the jobs. But much of that isn't necessarily a function of the economy. It's a function of economies allowed to open or not and trying to control a disease that many are trying to work along with before, of course, we hopefully find a vaccine. If you look at the 749,000, it definitely is a nice number. We'd like it over a million. We'd like it over two. If you look at Chicago released early, it was also a good number, but we forgot something. We haven't talked about GDP. And I like the personal consumption expenditure. We all know it's a favorite, especially the core of the Fed. And if you open this chart up, and that number started in 1959, it's never been negative except for this quarter. I find that very fascinating. And it was revised quarter on quarter from minus 1% to minus 0.8. The biggest, lowest number I found actually was up 0.2. Now, you see that on the chart? Let's go and look at Chicago. It happened to have been the best number since December of 2018 at 62.4 and well above the 3- and 6-month moving averages. As far as what occurred in our markets, the Mnuchin talk definitely moved markets, but if you look at boons on top of tens, they look exactly identical. That shouldn't be shocking. We're all trading basically stimulus anywhere around the globe. It's all fungible, just like the credit crisis. And finally, if we look at what's going on with the dollar index over the last several sessions, it basically lost a penny from high to low, 94.80 to 93.80, but it is stabilizing. Carl, back to you.
All right, Rick, we'll see you later. Rick Santelli. When we come back, as we said, Regeneron rising on news about its antibody cocktail study. We'll talk to the company's chief scientific officer in a moment. One reason that the markets are hanging on to close to 33.50. We're back in a moment.
Data from biotech giant Regeneron showing some promising results for its antibody cocktail to treat the coronavirus. Joining us now is a person whom I know as probably someone who's brought more medicines, more drugs to the market that have been approved, member of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, and someone I have had a close relationship for a very long time, Chief Scientific Officer, Dr. George Yancopoulos of Regeneron. Doctor, always good to see you, sir.
Jim, it's always great being on. We'll never forget that you spotted us many years ago when we were a $5 stock and you thought our special technologies could make us a powerhouse. And I hope you appreciate we've been working really hard to prove you right with our new medicines to fight blindness, asthma, atopic dermatitis, heart disease, cancer, and now with our efforts against COVID-19.
Well, let's talk about that. To me, when I distill things, I think that this could be the hope for it is to get non-hospitalized patients to recover faster. Is that too broad a shorthand?
No, I think it's a... That's the crux of it. And just to step back a second, as we all know, there's been enormous interest with this pandemic about whether the immune system and the antibodies it makes can help people when they get infected or not. And our study made several important advances. So the first thing we did was we provided very convincing evidence that, yes, people's immune systems most of the time can do a great job fighting the virus by making antibodies against the virus. But then we showed that for each person, it's a race between the virus and their immune system. Most people win this race by rapidly making their own antibodies. However, some people make antibodies more slowly, and this delayed response could put them at risk of losing this race to the virus. And the consequences of losing the race are getting sicker for longer and maybe needing hospitalization, maybe worse. All and right. So the really important thing we showed with our cocktail is that we can use this antibody cocktail to substitute for a person's immune system. In essence, we can turn losers into winners by giving them their own immune response in a vial.
Well, how is this different from, I had David Ricks on recently from Lilly. How is this different from what Eli Lilly's doing?
Well, in many ways, the approach is the same, and I think that our study probably, you know, is optimistic in terms of for their studies as well. But I think our results, at least from what's been described publicly, are so far more convincing. We were able to make this realization that it's the people who are losing the race, the people who are not mounting their own immune response, those are the people where this sort of therapy can be most effective to. That's a really big advance.
Well, if that's the case, then a chance for emergency use? I mean, what's the path for emergency use, doctor? Because it was, from listening to you, I think even though it's just, 275 patients, that the FDA should take notice, try to get some more people, in any sort of study, because this could be breakthrough and also give you a lot of advice about what the vaccine should look like.
Yeah, well, I think this also is promising for vaccines, because vaccines are trying to induce exactly the sort of antibodies that we're now giving to patients. But even though it's only 275 patients, let me remind you, the reason the vaccine studies have to be so much bigger is there's a lot more safety concerns with vaccines than with this therapy. This therapy, at least theoretically, is probably much safer and does not need as large studies as the vaccines do. We do think that this data that we've now generated is pretty compelling. And of course, it's up to regulators and others to decide whether an emergency use authorization is warranted here. But I think the data is really compelling here that we can really be making a difference for these patients.
All right, Doctor, one last question. I'm like many people, I'm going to be tested. I'll test it today, Wednesday at, 2 o'clock. If it shows something terrible tomorrow, should I try to get the doctor to give me Regeneron, formulation, or is that just being too flip?
Well, right now, it's not necessarily available. But if you're asking for my opinion and based on the data, if it was me, and I know as much about this as anybody else, I would definitely want to get access to this antibody cocktail if I was recently diagnosed and I had high viral titers.
Wow. Okay, that's pretty significant because we don't have anything like that right now. Congratulations to you, doctor, and to your team at Regeneron. They've done such a fantastic job, and I know that this is not your first pandemic, and I think that makes you very different from a lot of the other people we deal with. Thank you, sir.
We appreciate you.
All right, call back to you.
All right, Jim. We are keeping an eye on Palantir and that direct listing that we'll expect later on this morning. Stick around for the first trade and Alex Karp with our Andrew Ross Sorkin as the S&P gets a bounce back to 33.55. Don't go anywhere. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
All right, so, Carl, you might notice that Boeing is up. It's been up all morning. Don't forget, Steve Dixon, head of the FAA, flies today in the 737 MAX. I think that that is a prelude to perhaps approval. We'll talk more about that tonight. But I think that you have to understand that this is something that is long awaited and I think will be viewed as being the last step before validation, not vindication, but validation that the 737 MAX works. Very good news for Boeing.
Yeah, making another run at the 50-day, Jim, which has been a suppressant really since July.
I think you buy it. I've not liked it. I think you buy it. This is it. Now you're at the tail end of this mess, and I think that's the case. There's going to be demand because I believe that the travel numbers are at a nadir and have to get better. There's just too much demand that's been pent up. People just waiting to hear that the planes are safe and we can go somewhere. And I think we're, other than Disney, people want to travel.
Yeah, it would be nice, Jim. What's on Mad Money tonight?
Okay, so we have Mark Benioff. He's got a surprise announcement for us. We've got to find out what that is. And then the hottest company other than Zoom is DocuSign. I used DocuSign yesterday. I used DocuSign. All of us use DocuSign. It's a way to circumvent pretty much any red tape. And Dan Springer's done a remarkable job. It's been a fabulous stock. We'll find out more.
All right. That's going to be one to watch tonight, Jim. We'll see you at 6.
Thank you,
Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern time. We're watching headlines from Delivering Alpha. Dow's up 250 on some pretty good data today as we close out Q3.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.